And I remember in my early years, I went to a school, and I remember meeting this owner of a school, and she was telling me, "So you want me to pay you to come and tell stories to my students? You're basically asking me to pay you to do the work that my teachers should be doing." And I was telling her, you know what? The fact that you've used should, it means they are not doing it. And let's face the fact that teachers are there to make sure the curriculum needs are met. And we talked, and she was saying, "No, I love what you're saying. I think it sounds like it's really interesting, but I don't think I can pay you to come and tell stories. I think you'd make a fantastic teacher. Go to a teacher's college, and I promise you, when you graduate, I'll give you a job."
Hi, everyone. My name is Masha Tisa, and you're listening to the Creative Bulb podcast. This is a podcast that helps you get to your full creative potential. One of the things that I'm really excited about this podcast is I get to meet a lot of people. And now, today, I have a special guest, by the way, who is doing storytelling. Imagine, all she does is storytelling. You know how they say your gift will make room for you before kings and everything else? And she'll be talking to us about her journey, how she started, what are some of the different opportunities in the industry. She's also going to be mentioning about her experience in terms of writing books. She's going to be talking to us about her journey as well. So ladies and gentlemen, without wasting much time, I'd like to introduce you to Wangari, the storyteller. But before we get into the podcast, I'd like to remind you there's an online radio I'd like you guys to listen to. It's called Mdundo Online. If you're looking for an online radio that has East African conscious music, Mdundo Online is the show for you. So ladies and gentlemen, back to our conversation. I'd like you to welcome Wangari, the storyteller, to the Creative Bulb podcast.
Welcome so much, Wangari, to the podcast. Karibu.
Nante.
Yeah. So I was just saying that you are a storyteller. If someone was to ask you who's Wangari, what would you say?
So Wangari is a Kenyan based here in Nairobi who is in love with stories in all formats. So written stories, listening to stories, and telling stories. I think my world from a very young age has been around stories and around books. And I also never thought that I would make a career or a living around telling stories. I mean, I didn't even know there was anything like a storyteller, professional storyteller. But I think life is interesting. Here we are.
Life is truly interesting. Here we are. So before we just get into how we got into storytelling, I'm interested in knowing, what are some of the wins you've had with this storytelling gift? Because you know you're just telling stories. Honestly, how have you survived? So what are some of the things this storytelling gift, where some of the places it's taken you? We can start with the wins and then we understand the journey.
So so I think for me, storytelling combines two things that I absolutely love. I love reading, and of course, as a storyteller, as a performance storyteller, then you really have to do a lot of reading as part of your research. You need to talk to people. So I read a lot, both for work. Actually, I think nowadays I read more for work than not for work, like I used to do before. And I also love traveling. And thanks to my art, I've been able to travel a lot locally. And traveling is also about meeting different people, different kinds of audiences. So I love that with storytelling, I can be able to do my craft to different kinds of audiences. I can work with children, I can work with teenagers, I can work with families, I can work with older people. And I've been able to travel a lot within the country, working with schools, working with organizations, working with individuals. And also out of the country, I've also been able to travel simply because of the work that I do. I think that is the biggest win as far as storytelling is concerned. And also, it's also a way for me to bond with my kids. So it's always great because it's one of the things that I can actually bring my kids to work with me. I think that's a win that is unquantifiable.
Now I'm trying to understand, because storytelling has made you travel a lot and you are one of the renowned storytellers in Kenya. So I'm just interested in knowing, at what point did you discover you have this gift in storytelling? How far back does it date? You can tell us through your journey how you discovered and now until where you are at right now.
I got into the arts, I think, by default. I had never planned or even thought I could be in the arts. I dabbled in a bit of drama when I was growing up in church. When I was in high school, I was really good in languages, and I was kind of forced to join the drama club for a year, and it was horrifying. I dropped that immediately after I left. I never really planned to get into the arts. For me, it was like a gap year after high school, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe I need to go to college. I have no idea what I want to go and study. And I thought, okay, I don't want to stay in the house. So what do I do? And so we had a family friend who said, okay, you know what? I know you're good in languages. And I have a friend who has a theater group. And I said, okay, that sounds interesting. And I have to be honest, because I was not really interested in the art or the drama. But for me, it was a way of having finished high school, being home, I think, for a year or two. It was like, oh, okay. I would get a place to be hanging out. That's really how it all started. So I joined this theater group, and we were doing a lot of traveling theater, working with set books, and it was a lot of fun. Traveling around, performing in different schools. And I thought, okay, this is interesting. And along the way, I met one of my directors who was doing storytelling. And so sometimes I would go and hang out with them when they were doing their rehearsals, when they were going for their shows. I would tag along, I would do their costuming for them, you know, just being on the periphery. And so one day they said, okay, why don't you try this out? And I thought, okay, well, let me give it a shot. At first, I thought it was very easy. I was just thinking, what's the big thing about just going on stage and telling a story? Until I realized really what a process it is. But I fell in love with it, because I felt that away from what I had been doing for theater, away from what I was doing for television, is that storytelling gives you a larger way of interacting with people, because as opposed to a play where the audience just comes and sits and watches the show, and then when they are done, they're clapping and going, they're not really part of the world that you are with on stage. It's like, this is me on stage, that is the audience watching a play, and that's it. And the same goes to television, because I've done a number of television shows. It's the same thing. It's like, this is my show, you're here to just peep through, and that's it. I felt that storytelling, one, it is very interactive, is that it is not a set script. As much as I know the story that I'm probably going to tell, I have rehearsed it.
Yeah.
I know my interactive points, is that a lot of times the energy, the direction the performance takes relies on the audience that I am working with. And I kind of love that, because then it made my work very unpredictable. In that I can tell the same story to two or three different audiences, but then it's going to be a really different experience, both for me and for the audience. I still wasn't really sure that I was in the arts to stay. Like I said, it was just, for me, something to do before I become an adult and get a real job. But then I realized that I was actually really enjoying it, and I was good at it. And I also have to thank the people who I found doing storytelling then, and who took me under their wing, because they showed me that it's actually something that I can do and make a living out of. So yeah, I think here we are now, so many years down the line. sometimes, especially when I went back now to college, and I would get asked, like, the first person who asked me, so you actually tell stories for a living? Initially, when I was beginning, it was not very easy, because most people take storytelling, one, as, so what's professional about it? And I remember in my early years, I went to a school, because I think I was doing a lot of work with schools. I still do a lot of work with schools even now. And I remember meeting this owner of a school, and she was telling me, so you want me to pay you to come and tell stories to my students? You're basically asking me to pay you to do the work that my teachers should be doing. And I was telling her, you know what? The fact that you've used should, it means they are not doing it. And let's face the fact that teachers are there to make sure the curriculum needs are met. And she was saying, you know, I love what you're saying. I think it sounds like it's really interesting, but I don't think I can pay you to come and tell stories. I think you'd make a fantastic teacher. Go to a teacher's college, and I promise you, when you graduate, I'll give you a job. And I remember leaving there and asking myself, Wangari, are you really, really sure you want to be in this field of the arts?
Yeah.
But I think looking back now, every time I feel like, whoa, okay, maybe things are not going the way that I was hoping they would, I remember that day, and I remember all the wins over the last 10, 15 years, and I say, yes, I think I am in the right place.
In fact, when you're giving that example of a teacher who was misunderstanding you and asking you, why should I pay you for storytelling? It just also, just goes to show the mindset, because people are like, you're telling stories, you should become a teacher or something. Maybe tell us, okay, because it actually served as a point for you to motivate you to do better. So now I'm looking at this storytelling bit. So when you compare then and now, is there a change with people? Do people still feel like you have to, you know, like whatever you're doing is not valuable? Do we have a change in people and in schools right now when you approach them? And what caused that change?
Yeah, so I think the people, it's not about it's not valuable. It's the issue of, you know, coming from an African background where stories were told around the fireplace by our grandparents, and it was never seen as a profession, you know. I mean, you're a grandparent, you're a parent, you're an aunt, you're an uncle, so you tell stories. It's not like it's something you're actually getting paid for. People absolutely love having storytellers at events. The issue is the payment bit. So I wouldn't say that there has been an issue in terms of getting gigs. The issue was mostly about, okay, so I love what you're doing, but now the payment bit is where it becomes an issue. I think things have really, really improved over the last 10, 15 years. Mostly one in terms of platforms where stories are can be told, where storytelling is happening. I think then it was mostly schools. Nowadays, I get even parents who tell me, I have a birthday for my child and I want a storyteller. And this has not been the norm. So sometimes you ask, okay, so I like, what do you mean we want a storyteller? And they say, you know what? I love the idea of sitting around with the family and telling stories. And I think I want more for my child's birthday at, instead of just bouncing castles and face painting and those kinds of things. We're having organizations calling to do storytelling in conferences, in workshops. I think one of my most interesting events that I have done was some years ago when I was approached by an international organization. And I remember getting actually, I think it was a Facebook message saying, we are having a conference for microfinances of people who are working around seeds and open banks. And do you think storytelling, we would have a story for that kind of setting? For me, it was interesting in this way because one, when now I responded, we began talking, then the lady told me, we have tried to teach this kind of concept over the last few years in different ways. But clearly it has not been sinking in the people that we are dealing with. And someone suggested, why not try storytelling? And I could see even her, she was not really convinced because she was more of an office person. And she was asking me, okay, so if you want to give you this gig, what kind of stories would you tell? And I remember telling her, you know, I would actually, from the four stories, I gave her four stories and I said, I would prioritize folktales that are not even human stories. It is animal stories. And she's telling me, you want to come to a conference in this posh place, talking to people who are working in organizations, to CEOs. My boss is going to be there, and you want to come and tell animal stories. And I told her, from what you have told me, these are the stories that I feel would work. Because I kind of get the concept you're trying to sell. So she told me, well, she'll go and consult, and they also had a musician, they had a poet on the day. And I remember when I was going, so they told me, okay, we're gonna give you a gig. And on the day I went and I ran and said, I'm actually coming with a musician, and my musician plays the urutu and drums. And I think she was now even more confused, and she thought I was crazy. And on the day when I went, and it was they had a break, then I was doing my session, and I could see her standing in the background, and I could see the doubts in her face, like she was not really sure. She was probably thinking this might even cost me my job or something like that.
Yeah.
And after we did the session, she came and told me, from all the things we've tried, they had, I think, a 3-4 day event. I think this session worked really, really well. That she even offered me another gig the next night part of the cocktail session.
Wow.
So I think for me, storytelling is one of those things that you actually have to experience to be able to get a grasp of exactly what is happening. And once you experience it, then it's much easier to understand. Okay, so I'm gonna be coming there and telling stories. For now, having been in the field for quite a long time, I think 90% of my work is referrals. So that should say something.
I love what you say, that a big percentage of your work is usually referrals. I'm just trying to, okay, for me, the reason I was even looking for storytelling is I've always desired to, you know that when you're saying before, we are coming from a background of sitting around a fireplace and you're being told stories by grandparents. I've never been really told stories by my grandparents. I've always longed for someone to tell me those stories. I don't think it happens a lot now, maybe because of the way things have changed. So,
and urbanization.
Yeah, urbanization. A lot of us are missing out on this. So, how important were those sessions that our grandparents used to have and tell stories? How important were they? And what can we do now with this urbanization and what that is happening to ensure we bring back that culture? Or we can just move on. Do we really need stories now?
Yeah. So, going from the past, I think they were very important. And so let's not forget that that was one of the very major ways of passing teachings from the older generation to younger people. Learning even genealogy, like how do you learn your family tree? They were not just sitting there and saying, okay, so you are the son of so-and-so. A lot of these things were being done orally, whether it's in via storytelling, whether it's via music, via dance, via oral poetry. So it was definitely very important in that particular way. But also, I think for me, what was even more important then, and it should be very relevant now, it is about bonding for the family. And I think that is what we have kind of lost today. And it's because of the way life is. Urbanizations, families are not living together anymore. I mean, yeah. You probably have your grandparents, if they're still alive, they're probably 2, 3, 8 hours away from where you live. Grandparents are becoming younger and younger every day. If you are 50 and you are a grandparent, you're probably still working. Yeah. And they don't really even have that energy to sit around there telling stories. Even as parents, or because of course parents should also be doing this kind of thing. I think life is has become too busy. We are everywhere chasing paper, which is important because bills have to be paid. That we sometimes lose some of these opportunities to sit around and share stories. And like you said, you didn't grow up listening to stories from your grandparents. I also didn't grow up listening to stories from my grandparents. So I grew up around books. My mother was really, really big on books. You know, you do something good, she buys you a book. You do something wrong, Tammy is sitting down and having a read. So my introduction to stories has actually been through books. Is it important now? I think it's really, really important for us to do this because one, it is one of the ways we learn culture. And culture is not just our cultures, but cultures from other people around us. And I think sometimes when we get misunderstandings among people, among different communities, among different countries, it's just because we come from different backgrounds. And if I don't know your story, I don't know where you're coming from. I don't know why you're reasoning the way you are reasoning. I don't know why you do things the way you do them now. So I think for me, stories, I read somewhere they were saying that if I know your story and you know my story, then it is easier for us to disagree, but not become enemies. And this goes for both traditional stories, but also contemporary stories.
Yeah.
So one, we definitely need to keep telling stories because we have really beautiful stories from our different cultures. We have beautiful songs. We have amazing sayings that if we do not share these kind of things, they're going to get lost. And also coming from an oral background as Africans, we also find that one of the things we all need to do is to write these stories. One thing I find very sad is that even when you're looking for books around African folktales, most of the books that are available are not by Africans. And I find that really sad because nobody can tell your story the way you tell your story. By us telling these stories, we're keeping them alive, and the more it is going to be possible that, okay, so Marcia will say, okay, you know, I have had these stories. I may not be able to get time to sit down with my nieces, my nephews, my kids to tell them the stories. But if I write a book, it's going to reach many people, many children. They can be able to refer to these kinds of things. So I think it's also very important. And also, it's a way of bonding, not just in the family, but also in class as people. It's just a way of relaxing. I have been asked to go to schools, and one of the things that I get is that she tells me, we are looking for folktales, traditional stories, specifically because our children have lost imagination. And of course, if you cannot imagine, you cannot fantasize, you lose your creativity. So this, I mean, affects us directly as it is right now, whether it's in academics, whether it's in the workplace, if you need to get creative. And I think, I mean, the creativity in our African stories, the characters that were there, I mean, you're having the ogres, you're having the Amonani, you're having, you know, all these kind of a thing of things, the complex situations that are dealt in stories, but in a very simple way. For example, I mean, I think in all Kenyan traditions, traditional stories, we're having this whole bit about ogres and that kind of a thing. And it's basically just trying to teach you, you know, don't take everything at face value. Try and dig a bit deeper. But someone is not coming to lecture you or to preach to you. So that's one thing I love about stories. And also that why it's also very important now is that for a story, you what speaks to you, which is why I think it's very important for us to tell the stories now.
Yeah.
And also move away from the issue of just saying, okay, so the moral of the story is, please, let's do away the moral, because I think stories speak to different people in different ways. I prefer actually asking the audience that I'm dealing with, whether it's children, whether it's adults, is that what have you learned from this story? Because then I realize that they pick things that even me as a storyteller, I had never seen in a particular story. I remember, I think last year I was doing a performance. I'd been invited to do something around myths to an international kind of crowd. And so I said, oh, okay, one of the myths that I know and I absolutely love is the story of the Kikuyu and Mumbi. And so, I mean, I've told that story so many times. So for me, it was just like, okay, how are you need to do a gig for how long? Okay, 40 minutes, that's two stories. I just picked what I thought was quite easy things. But then the team that was, or actually mostly storytellers, when they began looking and they were telling me, have you realized how, I mean, the way you told the story about the daughters, the issue of not counting the children to the full, because as much as we say that Kikuyu and Mumbi had nine daughters, in the stories, it's usually not nine, they are 10. Okay, I'm assuming you know this story, right?
I know it.
Yes. So those were asking, why are you saying that it's about nine daughters, yet in the story you say it is not nine and it is not 10?
Yeah.
And we got this whole thing of saying, you know what, traditionally the Kikuyu, and I think all actually many African cultures, you don't count your wealth to the full, because you might think that bad might happen to it. And they were saying, okay, and I was wearing the Kikuyu outfit, and they were saying, okay, you know, it's interesting also the way you're discussing about the way that they were attached to their land and even the colors of wearing, you know, things that you had never thought about. And also they asked me, okay, so is it very normal that in Kenyan culture, in traditional societies, that you have clans named after after women.
Yeah.
And I realized it's actually, I think, those are the only people who I know whose clans are exclusively named around women. And then it was now this whole discussion, even into the role of women. The way we look at it is that we thought that traditionally the woman was not very very visible, was not very involved. And you're like, okay, but if a woman was not very visible, not very involved, was not a very critical key, how come you're having these names named after women? And it was, I think I left that session wondering, such a simple story to me seems to have a whole new dimension. And I think for me, that's what I love about stories, that you can never exhaust a story.
Yeah.
And the more you think you know something, the more you do not know it. So I think it's important for us to keep telling these stories and to look at our stories in a different way, not just a face value that it is interesting. Of course, it's very interesting to listen to and to even tell this story, but look at them in even the deeper meaning that they try to tell. And it's also a way of even discussing, for example, cultures. So, for example, there's a story that I tell. There's a story of Washo and the Igbo. And I think one of the things that I love is that I grew up listening to my mother, who would always say, "Hey, Sheko ni Washo mogo odai te mokodi toro." And I was like, okay, it's a really nice saying. But when I came to realize, oh, there's actually a story behind this particular phrase.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is really nice. I thought, okay, this is a story I would definitely love to tell. And of course, you know, when you want to create a story, you I try to get as many different versions of the story as I can. And of course, there's also this whole conversation around storytellers around the world where they ask, okay, so should you change stories to suit what you want to teach? And some people say you should not change traditional stories. You should tell them the way they are. And some say, you know what, and I think I prescribe to that particular kind of thinking, that even traditional stories were never told the same way over and over again. I think they used to change depending on who you were telling to, depending on different generations, and the context, the environment they were being told in. So yes, I think definitely change the stories. So for example, there is this story that also the story of Washo, and it has different versions. So in some versions, they say Washo was the only child of this couple. And the man, of course, would think, okay, well, I don't have a son, but I think in Washo, this is the son that I would have absolutely loved to have and would do things with her that was considered roles of the boys. So like, for example, in terms of slaughtering and roasting and eating meat, because apparently traditionally the Kikuyu women are not supposed to eat meat in public. Other versions say, oh no, you know, Washo was the second wife of a particular rich man, and when she was married, she came and tried to create divisions among the family. But anyway, I think you know the way the story flows is that at some point Washo gets pregnant, and she kind of remembers, you know, when she's pregnant, she's like, hey, you know, I'm really craving meat. And so she goes into the pan, takes a goat, slaughters it, cooks the had daughters already by now. Of course, when the man comes, he's like, are you crazy? You not only slaughtered a goat, but you were eating the meat in public and sharing it with the kids. And Masha says, yeah, but I am the one who takes care of the animals, right? So why should I not eat it? And of course, you can imagine the kind of conversation that that can already evoke in terms of, like, when you're looking at culture, what is culture? Who makes culture? So is culture static? Or should we, every once in a while, change culture to reflect who we are at that particular point?
Yeah.
But anyway, so the whole issue is that the husband says, okay, you know what? This is a crazy woman. She is pregnant. Maybe just a craving. Maybe she's actually carrying a son right now. And when she gives birth, this whole madness will, you know, will disappear.
Yeah.
But Washo keeps doing that. And, well, she does get a baby boy. And the husband says, okay, well, at least that is it.
We've been talking about a couple of things, and you've been sharing about your experiences and how we need storytelling. And I was also just sharing with you how I've never been told stories by my grandparents. And for some reason, I feel like that oral tradition, the culture is not there anymore, but it's really important because I'm always longing for such experiences. Now, for someone who's a storyteller, could you say that we've lost some of these stories? And if we've not lost them, where can we find them? Like, even when you're doing your research, where do your research from? Have we lost them? And the question is, have we lost some of these stories? And if we've not, where can we find some of these stories? Or how can we conserve the little stories that we have left? Yeah. You can give recommendations on sites, places. Yeah,
so I think first, we have a lot of stories. We have a lot of stories. I think what we need to do is to see stories beyond entertainment. Like I was mentioning, the story of Washo. I mean, with that particular one story, you can use it as a bed to discuss so many issues. You can use it to discuss the whole issue of women empowerment, about gender, things like polygamy. You're discussing things around pregnancy and cravings. I think we just, first of all, need to look at stories away from just entertainment. And two, we need to look at stories that it's not just stories that were told a long time ago. It is to analyze the stories that, because when we say about storytelling, make it look like it's a very something that a long, long time ago, but it's to look at how relevant is it to us now. Because like that story that I'm talking about, the story of Washo, you're discussing issues around, like I'm saying, polygamy, about gender roles, about upbringing, about work ethics. Are those not issues we are dealing with right now in our society? Are those not issues that we are dealing with, not just children, because also people see stories as stories for children, but it's about young people who are trying to get into the work industry and wondering, so what should I do? Okay, what kind of role, career should I follow? Talking about in terms of when you look at stories where there are conversations, where maybe even elders are called to come and discuss things. I mean, I think the African tradition heritage is so, so rich that almost every issue that we are dealing with right now can be seen in stories from the different communities that we are having. So my background, my academic background is actually not in development studies. So when I'm looking at the social aspects of things, I'm looking at, why don't you start people when you're having issues, you're having a workshop or a session, a conversation around issues of peace and land. It is much easier to start with them from what they know. All these kinds of things you can actually pick from the stories they tell. What stories do they tell about themselves? What stories do they tell about other people? Because then you can easily pick those kinds of things and then see how to build on them. So let's not look at stories as if it's just something that was there a long time ago, it's not relevant to us now. That is one of the things that is going to help us to keep the culture going. Two, that storytelling is very wide now. It's not just for children. I know people see it as just for children, but it's very wide. And not just here locally, but also across the world. People are even doing stories specifically around healing.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even know those kind of, you know, it, to look at it beyond the traditional aspect. You're looking at stories as a way of bonding. With your children. So I think it is still one very relevant now.
Yeah.
The culture of telling the stories has been lost.
Yeah.
Luckily, I think I can see the last 10 or so years that I've been in the field. Things are improving. Saying, you know, you're finding a client calling or a library calling and saying, no, we know we can do puppetry, we know we can do drawing, you know, we can do dance and mime, but we definitely want to do storytelling. So it means that people are realizing that these things are actually very important. So it's just doing these things more. I think, I mean, not everybody will become a professional storyteller like Wangari. But I think we can tell this story in all our other avenues. I even do, for example, workshops for teachers and parents on how to read to your child. How do you make your child get interested in reading?
Yeah.
Away from the curriculum. Because I think when I talk to young people, most of the them say, hey, me, the last novel I read is my school set book. And why? Because you have made reading and stories look like it is just for passing exams. But if you make stories look like it's something in life that you need in your everyday to learn new information, when you are going on YouTube to check out a video on how to do something, what are you doing? You're researching someone's story, isn't it? So I think we need to look at stories away from just the traditional fabric and see how relevant it is now.
Yeah.
There are storytellers. I am happy that there are storytellers now, even locally. Wangari is just one of them. There are other storytellers, I think more than when I joined in. And I am based in Nairobi. When I started out, I knew many people who are based here. We're having storytellers also in other parts of the country. And I think that tells me that there is a need for this kind of a thing.
Yeah.
One of the things that I am currently doing, which is something that I'm really interested in, is in nurturing new, younger storytellers. Well, younger can mean, it doesn't have to be about around age, but people who are new in storytelling, are interested in storytelling. So early this year, I did a 3-month workshop with a group of 17 people who wanted to use storytelling in different ways, not just performing like I do, but in different ways. Someone works with in the field of psychology, and they feel that storytelling might help them when they are dealing with their clients. Someone works in human rights and wants to tell the stories of the people they are dealing with away from just the numbers. Because what I look at for stories, that the stories give us the meat behind the numbers. When you're looking at even things like, for example, when we had this long COVID period, and we were having the Minister of Education saying, oh, so 4,000 girls got pregnant. Those are just numbers you're giving me. But if you want to go back and tell what is the story behind these numbers, you're more likely to reach one more people and be more effective by telling the stories behind it. So storytelling is very varied. It is very wide. If someone is interested in telling stories, please learn how to do it. I think now there's a much bigger market for it. And you don't have to be a performer like me. You can use storytelling in whatever field of whatever field you are in. Are you a doctor? I'm sure you will need communication skills in whatever it is you're doing.
I really love what you're saying, even what you're doing in terms of capacity building, because now you're trying to train people how to tell stories, because we need a lot of people to be telling these stories. My other question before now we go to your journey about writing books, my other question would be now, your recommendations as a storyteller, where do people find these stories exactly? If it's books, what books particularly? When you're talking about the stories, where do you think they should get them?
Okay. So stories, you get them from different places. So one, if your parents or your grandparents, if you're lucky to have them still alive, please go and mine stories from them. Because I think it's very important. And you're also going to get the stories in the raw format that you can actually now be able to mold into the kind of story you want to tell. A lot of times is that when I get a story, I will most probably not tell the story the same way that I got it. When you find a story in, you can find stories in books. I read a lot. There are a lot of books. Well, not a lot, but there are a number of books with oral with folktales from different communities. I know that I can clearly see from my library something from Kenyan Indians, the Maasai. You can find some of these books. They're not available a lot, but you can find them. But if you are able to actually talk to older people and let them tell the stories to you, I think it's an even richer, because one, the way they are telling their stories, there's a way you cannot capture that in a story that is written. What kind of storytelling is not also not very static? It's not just a story. Most of the time, African stories will have a song. The stories that you're going to find written don't have those kinds of things. They're going to have like sayings that are very specific to the community or the person who is telling you those stories. I tell people that if I had a lot of money, what I would actually want to do with the next 10 or 20 years of my life is actually do research. Go to the people in the different communities and just document those things, because once they are gone, they take a whole library and a whole culture with them. So that for me would be the first one. Of course, it's not always possible. We are living in urban centers. Our grandparents are busy. Our grandparents, some of them didn't even listen to those stories. So books are your next option. So there are a number of books. I know that, especially here in Kenya, I think I have like 4 or 5 books from different communities that are giving specifically stories from the communities. Like there's something about oral literature of the Maasai. I have a book around Kenyan Indians. I know there's a book from Kikuyu that has Kikuyu folktales. There's one with Bukusu folktales. There is Futinda for the Luos. So if you can find these books, they're also a really good resource. What I would encourage you is that once you get the book, don't be stuck with the story as it is on the book. Feel free to modify the story to reflect what you want to teach. And of course, something else is also around listening to people. Listen to other storytellers and telling stories. Check on the internet. Nowadays, I think storytelling is actually like a buzzword. People are doing a lot of stories and storytelling. Check at not just the local, the Kenyan authors or African, African storytellers, but storytellers from around the world. Learn about stories from different cultures. And the good thing is that now, also our societies are also very cosmopolitan. So it would be nice. I mean, if you are a Luo, don't just look for Luo stories or Luya stories or Kikuyu stories or Kamba stories. Of course, some of these stories are from different Kenyan communities are more available than others. I remember, I think about 2 years ago, I was doing a project with Bomas, and it was very hard to find, for example, stories from Turkana people or stories like from the Ogiek community. So I think we need to do also more in terms of documenting these stories, whether in visual, audiovisual, in audio, in books. We definitely need to do more. I wish we would have more books around this.
Yeah.
And of course, please attend storytelling events.
Yeah.
Wherever you can.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Because that's also another way of you.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So I love what you said about documenting and also in audiovisual and just going to get the story in the raw format. It would be a really good idea. And also just reading. And also I love the different examples you've had. So like, I know you as a person, you have written a couple of children's books. And so we'd really want to know your journey to writing children's books and the whole industry as a whole. Would you tell us about the books you've written? How did you get into that? And what would you say about the children's book industry?
Yes, I have, I think around 20 books that have my name now. I think just like my storytelling, I never set out to become a writer. And that thing they say that you don't, you things find you and you're not looking.
Yeah.
I think for me, that's classic of me in so many ways, my very first book is called The Forever Tree.
Uh-huh.
It is actually a folktale. And it's a story that I tell a lot. It's about a tree with a very tongue-twisting name. And I remember it was actually motivated by one of my friends. So I was doing something for a publishing house. And I remember my boss was saying, okay, you know, why don't you give us another stories? We try and see if it's something that can be published in a book. And so I asked one of my friends, okay, you've had me telling many different stories. So which one would you propose? And she said, okay, I think you should try this particular book, this particular story. So I shared that story and it was published. And I remember my first year, I think for me, it was not even about the issue of I've written a book. It was seeing my name on a book cover. I was like, whoa, wow, this is like really big. Given that for us, when we were growing up, there were not that many books that had African names. And of course, when you grow up reading Cinderella and Heidi and Snow White and Famous Five, the idea of an author is not someone who, okay, my lights have gone, but anyway, it's not someone who shares your skin color or who has a name like yours. So that was the very first book I wrote. It's one of my favorite books and one of my favorite stories actually to tell. And then after that, that was a traditional story that I had adapted. I have written, I wrote a couple more books, which was now me trying out my hand at fiction. well, creative fiction. I mean, also the folktale could have been said to be fiction, but creative fiction. So then I got my next book, I think The Color Magician. Then another book came out. And then, so I have some books also in a series called the More Africa series. And the More Africa series was is a book that I have authored and co-authored with other Kenyan authors. And the idea was to have books that have that give the context of a Kenyan and African child. Because just imagine how, well, when we were in school and we wrote How You Spent Your Holidays, and I was very good at writing compositions. So, and I remember, I think one of those, I spent my holidays skating on ice. And even in all my travels, even now as an adult, as much as I've traveled abroad, I have never seen ice. I've not traveled in winters. You can imagine that kind of scenario.
Yeah.
We're feeding our children, and even from all the movies they are watching. I mean, one of the things that I have had to, I actually laugh, is that, for example, my daughter was telling me, why don't we have Christmas?
Yeah.
I never understood what issue with Christmas is until she told me, no, Christmas for her is snow outside.
Yeah.
It is not a day. Because when she's watching movies, holiday movies, what happens in Christmas?
Yeah.
We're out there making snowmen.
Yeah.
So the idea of writing actually stories that the Kenyan child or the African child would relate with, activities they can actually relate to. So for example, assuming something as that in your story, that they are climbing a mountain, and they're not going to climb Mount Everest, they're climbing Mount Kenya or Mount Kilimanjaro, or they're going hiking on Ngong Hills or, you know, Kilimambogo. It is actually things that the children can easily lift from the book and relate with their actual experiences or things they can actually do. So yes, I have quite a number of books, and the series, my latest creative work is part of a series called the More Africa series that follows a family, a Kenyan family,
yeah,
and the things they do. They have the children, what do they do for the holidays, and the realities in their lives. So I think it's a really interesting one. It has 24 books, 12 in English and 12 in Kiswahili, that I've co-authored with other amazing Kenyan writers like Karim Bigatimi, Shalene Keshavji, Rebecca Nandua, that I think our children should definitely read.
Exactly.
How has the journey been? Well, let's first of all agree it is not easy to get published in Kenya.
Why is that so?
First, I think it's also the culture, the reading culture we have, that a lot of times we don't read unless it's for curriculum. A publishing company is a business.
Yeah.
They want to make money. So maybe one of the reasons why that even the folktales, books on folktales are even being phased out, because I think I've been looking for some books on folktales that I can see from my research that they existed. But you go to a company and they're telling you, sorry, we don't publish them anymore, because apart from the academic angle, they were not being bought. They felt it was not making financial sense.
Yeah.
So you find that most of the time publishing houses are trying to publish books that are curriculum based, because then you have to buy because of school, and then they can make money.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things. I think that's one of the biggest reasons why we're not publishing a lot of creative fiction. And of course, as you can imagine, I mean, there are as many Kenyans who would like to write, the platforms, of course, would not be as many. But I think there's still an opportunity. There are publishing houses who are very keen on writing, on publishing Kenyan authors. And I think for me, Story Moja is one of those publishers who, I mean, for them, they are very key that they want to publish mostly local Kenyan authors or African authors, because they want stories that people can relate with.
Yeah.
That's one challenge. And of course, another challenge that is there is that our creative industry, and even in terms of performance, whether it's storytelling, whether it's acting, whether it's directors, is still not big enough to accommodate many people making an actual living out of it. I think I'm one of the few people that I thank God that most of the money I make is around the arts, whether I'm running a workshop, or it's around my books, or it's a performance, you know, it's around, many people cannot afford to do that. That's also another reason why I think we don't have that many books, because then a creative writing needs mental space and physical space to be in the place to write. And really, you cannot be very creative if you are thinking about where your rent and your next meal is going to come from.
Yeah.
So you find that most of the people who write are not on a full-time basis, which I think is a bit sad, but well, it is what we have to work with. And also, yeah, so someone is saying, okay, well, I have a book out, but I cannot make a living out of it. So you find that most people then prefer to concentrate on issues that, on jobs that actually make money for them. But I think things are changing, and I think we should definitely write. I'm not asking you to quit your day job so that you can start writing. Please try to have the two coexist. Because if we don't write, then what? Other people will come and tell stories, our stories, but not in the way we want to tell them.
Yeah.
That is why most of the time, even in terms of movies, we're always complaining about, oh, so they portray Africa in a particular kind of way, being poverty in this and this and this. But until we are willing to go through the challenges, write stories that we would want the people outside there to look at us through those kinds of lenses, yeah, we really have no choice.
So like you mentioned about, so publishing, and the challenge is like most publishers don't pick up writers. So question, why can't publishers opt for self-publishing? What if it's published by yourself? What advantage does a publisher give you, in your opinion? And then the second question is, what are some of the legal issues someone like a children's author is likely to face? So like when you approach a publisher, how is the revenue done? Just give an example. Give us a picture of how it's done.
Okay. Well, people, over the last few years, actually, many Kenyans are actually opting for self-publishing, which I think is a good thing. Of course, self-publishing and the traditional publishing going by a publishing house, each has its merits and demerits. Of course, if you decide to go for self-publishing, then there is a less, then you can decide how you want your book published, when you want it out. You have more control over the product and the process. Of course, it is also not very cost friendly, because it means that all the expenses are coming out of your pocket. Printing especially is not very cheap if you want something quality. It also means that you also need to handle distribution and marketing on your own. But of course, it also means that you keep more money when you sell a book if you're self-publishing. So financially, I think it might make more sense if you go that way. It is more work, but it also, you know, you I think you reap bigger rewards. In traditional publishing, then you need to, if a publisher picks your book, then you agree on a royalty-based plan. So they say, okay, we're going to give you X percentage of net sales every year from what your book makes. Then, of course, then they will handle the publishing process for you. They will handle, let's say, things like proofreading and editing and design work, and, of course, help you a lot in terms of distribution, which I think for me, the bigger advantage between self-publishing and traditional publishing for me is actually distribution. Because, so for example, I am here in Nairobi, someone in Kilifi wants my book. If I did self-publishing, it means that I will either have to foot the bill to send the package to Kilifi, or I will ask the person who is buying to foot the bill, which is another expense. Unless you're doing that as a full-time job, which is what, I remember when my first book came out, people were asking me, okay, so you have your book. Is your next book coming out? Why don't you self-publish? And then for me, the whole thing was in terms of distribution, is that it's a lot of work. It needs someone to be there doing it on a full-time, the marketing and distribution. Whereas if you're published by a publisher, then most probably they're not, they're going to have their networks, someone they have doing marketing, and making sure that the book is available in all the bookshops around the country. So if you tell me, oh, I am in Marsabit, where can I get your book? I'll just ask them, so which bookshops around Marsabit do they stock the book? And I'll just send you there. For me, that is the biggest advantage. But of course, if you have networks, then definitely self-publishing is also an option. Issues around it. I think my biggest issue is around copyright. So I would advise anyone who looking at publishing, especially if you're publishing with a publisher, is look at in terms of copyrights. So who has the copyrights to your book? You know, for example, also what happens if, let's say, your book is going to be done into an audiobook or a videobook or a movie, let's say one day, how have you safeguarded your rights? So just it's around copyrights, about moral rights. Where can your book be used? Where can the story that you have told be used so that you are sure that it's not conflicting with the morals that you have? Make rights as well. So that you're not just looking at the physical copy, but beyond the physical copy, that your economic rights are also taken care of.
There's something you mentioned about copyright, which is a really good issue because it's always an issue with people who are writers. So when you publish when you're with a publisher, who owns the copyright? Are you the one who owns, am I your co-share? How does it usually work from your experience? Whose work is
it? So that depends on the contract that you have signed. Ideally for me, it's in a space whereby I would like the author to own the copyrights. Yeah. Because then it means that you can, you know, in case your book goes out of print and the publisher doesn't want to publish it again, you can also decide to publish it either self-publish or with a different publisher. It's also about what have you negotiated with your publisher. So it is just knowing, you know, when you're going there, know what are you signing. And a lot of times, because we are not professionals in terms of legal work, it can be an issue. I know I've also had issues in some of these kinds of settings. And I'm like, okay, well, we have to renegotiate this contract. So just trying to make sure that whatever is you're being represented is actually what you have negotiated. Even traditional publishing, it can also be that they buy your manuscript. Yeah. So they say we're gonna give you account to and then your manuscript becomes ours. Of course, you'll still go out with your name. So the thing is, do you know that is what you have negotiated, and do you feel that it works for you?
Yeah,
I think that's what I would just advise. Just know what you're signing.
Yeah, I hear you. So now we've been talking about children's book publishing and your whole storytelling journey, which is really inspiring. Now I want us to look at now capacity building. You mentioned you train a couple of people. So I just need, maybe you can share with us, how are you building capacity? Do you have workshops for people who are children's book writers? Where can we find your work, and how can we get in touch with you just to get these workshops?
Well, I think mimi bado ni mwandishi mdogo. So I do most of my capacity building for people who want to get into storytelling.
Yeah.
And for that, I work with, let's say, for example, teachers. I work with librarians. So if, let's say, a school wants to have a workshop for their teachers, we can do it at the school or at the library. What I was doing now, early this year, which is the first time I was doing it, is just having an open call for anyone from whatever field who wants to get the basics of performance storytelling. And for that, I can organize a workshop at a time of both mutual convenience. So I am definitely open to those kinds of things. I also try, whenever possible, to mentor storytellers by inviting you to come to my show, see how I'm doing it, come into my rehearsal. I show you how to adapt a story for performance, those kinds of things. And I hope it's something that I can definitely do more. I hope to do it in an even more structured way, where maybe two or three times a year, I have set workshops to train storytellers who want to either perform stories or do it in different ways. Where can you find me? I am active on social media, Facebook especially. Check out my page, Wangari the Storyteller. I am quite responsive on Facebook. You can also look for my work on YouTube, same name, Wangari the Storyteller. And you can also check out my website, wangarithestoryteller.co.ke. And definitely, let's engage. I'm always willing to try out new things, to try out new concepts.
Yeah,
I hope to do that. Of course, encourage people. I think storytelling as a field is growing, not just locally, but also internationally. We do not have enough storytellers.
Yeah, I really love what you're saying. We do not have enough storytellers, and you're really willing to put yourself out there to help people become storytellers. Now, Thank you so much for even doing this interview, because it's really opening up my mind to a lot of things, because it's always been a thing in me to just tell stories. Now, tell me, for that person who's listening now and he's wondering, what piece of advice would you have for them? This is Wangari, who's making a living from storytelling, trying to tell stories. What would you like to say to the person who's listening?
One, it is not easy. It is not rosy. You don't just wake up one day and start making a living in the arts. I think I also have some days when I'm thinking, wow, really? Is this something that I have my doubts? But I would say one thing is, be sure what you want to do. Be consistent. Consistency definitely pays. I think one of the reasons I'm actually able to be here doing is that I've been doing it for the last 15, 16 years. So people identify you with what you're doing as a brand. And also keep improving yourself. Because unfortunately, right now, we don't have a curriculum where, like, for example, you can actually go and study storytelling in college or in campus. So for us, you need to keep learning on the job. So keep on improving yourself. Learn from other storytellers. Learn from online. Meet people. Don't be afraid of getting criticism, because that's how you get better. So consistency, hang in there, keep on improving yourself, keep on improving your work, and build a brand for yourself. And I believe that things are definitely changing. They have changed already. They're definitely going to be better. And also just check in, what do you want to do? Because you don't have to do storytelling the way that Wangari does, works with mostly with maybe children or adults or this. You can also say, my storytelling, I want to do specifically this. You can also say that I love storytelling. I don't want to perform. I want to be organizing events. Feel free. It's a whole diverse industry.
Yeah, so when I hear you talk about these things, I'm also very interested. And also the fact that you can organize events, you don't have to be the one who's selling the stories, but you can facilitate and just to have create spaces for people like you to come in and tell the stories. I just want to say thank you so much, Wangari, because you're doing an amazing job. I'll definitely have to come to one of your shows. Me and those people, I'm always longing for people to tell me stories. I don't find them. So maybe I should be active in creating such spaces so that I get to listen to stories of people like you. And I'm also willing to learn. And also you've shared with us the website. So for anybody who's listening, they can just go check out your website, contact you, because you're very responsive. That's actually how I got you. You're very responsive, and that's why we are here. Thank you so much for doing this podcast.